Thalia turned to her hunter friend. Phoebe, I'll be back soon. Go find the others. Tell them I'm on my way.
You sure?
Phoebe narrowed her eyes at Leo and Jason, like they might kidnap Thalia or something.
It's fine, Thalia promised.
Phoebe nodded reluctantly, then raced down the mountain path, the white wolves at her heels.
Jason, Leo, just step where I step, Thalia said. It hardly ever breaks.
It hasn't met me yet, Leo muttered,
but he and Jason followed her up the bridge. Halfway up, things went wrong, and of course it was Leo's fault. Piper and Hedge had already made it safely to the top and were waving at them, encouraging them to keep climbing, but Leo got distracted. He was thinking about bridges, how he would design something way more stable than this shifting ice vapor business if this were his palace. He was pondering braces and support columns. Then a sudden revelation stopped him in his tracks.
"Why do they have a bridge?" he asked.
Thalia frowned. "Leo, this isn't a good place to stop. What do you mean?"
"They're wind spirits," Leo said. "Can't they fly?"
"Yes, but sometimes they need a way to connect to the world below."
"So, the bridge isn't always here?" Leo asked.
Thalia shook her head. "The wind spirits don't like to anchor to the earth, but sometimes it's necessary, like now. They know you're coming." Leo's mind was racing. He was so excited he could almost feel his body's temperature rising. He couldn't quite put his thoughts into words, but he knew he was on to something important.
"Leo," Jason said, "what are you thinking?"
"Oh, gods," Thalia said. "Keep moving. Look at your feet."
Leo shuffled backward. With horror, he realized his body temperature really was rising, just as it had years ago at that picnic table under the pecan tree, when his anger had gotten away from him. Now, excitement was causing the reaction. His pants steamed in the cold air. His shoes were literally smoking, and the bridge didn't like it. The ice was thinning.
"Leo, stop it," Jason warned. "You're going to melt it."
"I'll try," Leo said,
but his body was overheating on its own, running as fast as his thoughts.
"Listen, Jason, what did Hera call you in that dream? She called you a bridge."
"Leo, seriously, cool down," Thalia said. "I don't know what you're talking about, but the bridge is..."
"Just listen," Leo insisted. "If Jason is a bridge, what's he connecting? Maybe two different places that normally don't get along, like the air palace and the ground. You had to be somewhere before this, right? And Hera said you were an exchange."
"An exchange."
Thalia's eyes widened.
"Oh, gods."
Jason frowned. "What are you two talking about?" Thalia murmured something like a prayer.
"I understand now why Artemis sent me here. Jason, she told me to hunt for Lycaon, and I would find a clue about Percy. You are the clue. Artemis wanted us to meet so I could hear your story."
"I don't understand," he protested.
"I don't have a story. I don't remember anything."
"But Leo's right," Thalia said. "It's all connected. If we just knew where."
Leo snapped his fingers.
"Jason, what did you call that place in your dream? That ruined house. The wolf house?"
Thalia nearly choked.
"The wolf house? Jason, why didn't you tell me that? That's where they're keeping Hera?"
"You know where it is?" Jason asked.
Then the bridge dissolved. Leo would have fallen to his death, but Jason grabbed his coat and pulled him to safety. The two of them scrambled up the bridge, and when they turned, Thalia was on the other side of a 30-foot chasm. The bridge was continuing to melt.
Go!
Thalia shouted, backing down the bridge as it crumbled.
Find out where the giant is keeping Piper's dad. Save him. I'll take the hunters to the wolf house and hold it until you can get there. We can do both.
But where is the wolf house? Jason shouted.
You know where it is, little brother.
She was so far away now that they could barely hear her voice over the wind. Leo was pretty sure she said,
I'll see you there. I promise.
Then she turned and raced down the dissolving bridge. Leo and Jason had no time to stand around. They climbed for their lives, the ice vapor thinning under their feet. Several times, Jason grabbed Leo and used the winds to keep them aloft, but it was more like bungee jumping than flying. When they reached the floating island, Piper and Coach Hedge pulled them aboard just as the last of the vapor bridge vanished. They stood gasping for breath at the base of a stone stairway chiseled into the side of the cliff, leading up to the fortress. Leo looked back down. The top of Pike's Peak floated below them in a sea of clouds, but there was no sign of Thalia. And Leo had just burned their only exit.
What happened? Piper demanded. Leo, why are your clothes smoking?
I got a little heated, he gasped. Sorry, Jason. Honest, I didn't...
It's all right, Jason said. But his expression was grim. We've got less than 24 hours to rescue a goddess and Piper's dad. Let's go see the King of the Winds. Chapter 37 Jason. Jason had found his sister and lost her in less than an hour. As they climbed the cliffs of the floating island, he kept looking back, but Thalia was gone. Despite what she'd said about meeting him again, Jason wondered. She'd found a new family with the hunters and a new mother in Artemis. She seemed so confident and comfortable with her life. Jason wasn't sure if he'd ever be part of it. And she seemed so set on finding her friend Percy. Had she ever searched for Jason that way? Not fair, he told himself. She thought you were dead. He could barely tolerate what she'd said about their mom. It was almost like Thalia had handed him a baby, a really loud, ugly baby, and said, "Here, this is yours. Carry it." He didn't want to carry it. He didn't want to look at it or claim it. He didn't want to know that he had an unstable mother who'd gotten rid of him to appease a goddess. No wonder Thalia had run away. Then he remembered the Zeus cabin at Camp Half-Blood, that tiny little alcove Thalia had used as a bunk, out of sight from the glowering statue of the sky god. Their dad wasn't much of a bargain either. Jason understood why Thalia had renounced that part of her life too, but he was still resentful. He couldn't be so lucky. He was left holding the bag. Literally. The golden backpack of winds was strapped over his shoulders. The closer they got to Aeolus's palace, the heavier the bag got. The winds struggled, rumbling and bumping around. The only one who seemed in a good mood was Coach Hedge. He kept bounding up the slippery staircase and trotting back down.
"Come on, cupcakes! Only a few thousand more steps!"
As they climbed, Leo and Piper left Jason in his silence. Maybe they could sense his bad mood. Piper kept glancing back, worried as if he were the one who'd almost died of hypothermia rather than she. Or maybe she was thinking about Thalia's idea. They'd told her what Thalia had said on the bridge, how they could save both her dad and Hera. But Jason didn't really understand how they were going to do that, and he wasn't sure if the possibility had made Piper more hopeful or just more anxious. Leo kept swatting his own legs, checking for signs that his pants were on fire. He wasn't steaming anymore, but the incident on the ice bridge had really freaked Jason out. Leo hadn't seemed to realize that he had smoke coming out of his ears and flames dancing through his hair. If Leo started spontaneously combusting every time he got excited, they were going to have a tough time taking him anywhere. Jason imagined trying to get food at a restaurant. "I'll have a cheeseburger and... my friend's on fire! Get me a bucket!" Mostly, though, Jason worried about what Leo had said. Jason didn't want to be a bridge, or an exchange, or anything else. He just wanted to know where he'd come from. And Thalia had looked so unnerved when Leo mentioned the burned-out house in his dreams. The place the wolf Lupa had told him was his starting point. How did Thalia know that place, and why did she assume Jason could find it? The answer seemed close, but the nearer Jason got to it, the less it cooperated, like the winds on his back. Finally, they arrived at the top of the island. Bronze walls marched all the way around the fortress grounds, though Jason couldn't imagine who would possibly attack this place. 20-foot-high gates opened for them, and a road of polished purple stone led up to the main citadel, a white-columned rotunda, Greek-style, like one of the monuments in Washington, D.C., except for the cluster of satellite dishes and radio towers on the roof. "That's bizarre," Piper said.
"Guess you can't get cable on a floating island," Leo said. "Dang, check this guy's front yard."
The rotunda sat in the center of a quarter-mile circle. The grounds were amazing in a scary way. They were divided into four sections, like big pizza slices, each one representing a season. The section on their right was an icy waste, with bare trees and a frozen lake. Snowmen rolled across the landscape as the wind blew, so Jason wasn't sure if they were decorations or alive. To their left was an autumn park with gold and red trees. Mounds of leaves blew into patterns. Gods, people, animals, that ran after each other before scattering back into leaves. In the distance, Jason could see two more areas behind the rotunda. One looked like a green pasture with sheep made out of clouds. The last section was a desert where tumbleweeds scratched strange patterns in the sand like Greek letters, smiley faces, and a huge advertisement that read, "Watch Aeolus Nightly." "One section for each of the four wind gods," Jason guessed. "Four cardinal directions."
"I'm loving that pasture." Coach Hedge licked his lips. "You guys mind?"
"Go ahead," Jason said. He was actually relieved to send the satyr off. It would be hard enough getting on Aeolus's good side without Coach Hedge waving his club and screaming, "Die!" While the satyr ran off to attack springtime, Jason, Leo, and Piper walked down the road to the steps of the palace. They passed through the front doors into a white marble foyer, decorated with purple banners that read, "Olympian Weather Channel," and some that just read, "Ow!"
"Hello!"
A woman floated up to them. Literally, floated. She was pretty, in that elfish way Jason associated with nature spirits at Camp Half-Blood. Petite, slightly pointy ears, and an ageless face that could have been 16 or 30. Her brown eyes twinkled cheerfully. Even though there was no wind, her dark hair blew in slow motion. Shampoo commercial style. Her white gown billowed around her like parachute material. Jason couldn't tell if she had feet, but if so, they didn't touch the floor. She had a white tablet computer in her hand.
"Are you from Lord Zeus?" she asked. "We've been expecting you."
Jason tried to respond, but it was a little hard to think straight, because he'd realized the woman was see-through. Her shape faded in and out like she was made of fog. "Are you a ghost?" he asked. Right away, he knew he'd insulted her. The smile turned into a pout.
"I'm an aura, sir. A wind nymph. as you might expect, working for the Lord of the Winds. My name is Melly. We don't have ghosts.
Piper came to the rescue.
No, of course you don't. My friend simply mistook you for Helen of Troy, the most beautiful mortal of all time. It's an easy mistake.
Wow, she was good. The compliment seemed a little over the top, but Melly, the aura, blushed.
Oh, well, then, so you are from Zeus?
Jason said. I'm the son of Zeus, yeah.
Excellent. Please, right this way.
She led them through some security doors into another lobby, consulting her tablet as she floated. She didn't look where she was going, but apparently it didn't matter as she drifted straight through a marble column with no problem.
We're out of prime time now, so that's good, she mused. I can fit you in right before his 11-12 spot.
Okay, Jason said. The lobby was a pretty distracting place. Winds blasted around them, so Jason felt like he was pushing through an invisible crowd. Doors blew open and slammed by themselves. The things Jason could see were just as bizarre. Paper airplanes of all different sizes and shapes sped around, and other wind nymphs, Ori, would occasionally pluck them out of the air, unfold and read them, then toss them back into the air, where the planes would refold themselves and keep flying. An ugly creature fluttered past. She looked like a mix between an old lady and a chicken on steroids. She had a wrinkled face with black hair tied in a hairnet, arms like a human, plus wings like a chicken, and a fat feathered body with talons for feet. It was amazing she could fly at all. She kept drifting around and bumping into things like a parade balloon. Not an aura? Jason asked Melly as the creature wobbled by. Melly laughed.
That's a harpy, of course. Our, ugly stepsisters, I suppose you would say. Don't you have harpies on Olympus? They're spirits of violent gusts, unlike us, Ori. We're all gentle breezes.
She battered her eyes at Jason. Course you are, he said.
So, Piper prompted, you were taking us to see Aeolus?
Melly led them through a set of doors like an airlock. Above the interior door, a green light blinked.
We have a few minutes before he starts, Melly said cheerfully. He probably won't kill you if we go in now. Come along.
Chapter 38. Jason. Jason's jaw dropped. The central section of Aeolus's fortress was as big as a cathedral, with a soaring, domed roof covered in silver. Television equipment floated randomly through the air. Cameras, spotlights, set pieces, potted plants. And there was no floor. Leo almost fell into the chasm before Jason pulled him back.
Holy! Leo gulped. Hey, Melly, a little warning next time.
An enormous circular pit plunged into the heart of the mountain. It was probably half a mile deep, honeycombed with caves. Some of the tunnels probably led straight outside. Jason remembered seeing winds blast out of them when they'd been on Pike's Peak. Other caves were sealed with some glistening material like glass or wax. The whole cavern bustled with harpies, ori, and paper airplanes, but for someone who couldn't fly, it would be a very long, very fatal fall.
Oh, my, Melly gasped. I'm so sorry.
She unclipped a walkie-talkie from somewhere inside her robes and spoke into it.
Hello, Sets? Is that Nuggets? Hi, Nuggets. Could we get a floor in the main studio, please? Yes, a solid one. Thanks.
A few seconds later, an army of harpies rose from the pit. 3 dozen or so demon chicken ladies, all carrying squares of various building material. They went to work hammering and gluing and using large quantities of duct tape, which didn't reassure Jason. In no time, there was a makeshift floor snaking out over the chasm. It was made of plywood, marble blocks, carpet squares, wedges of grass sod, just about anything. "That can't be safe," Jason said.
"Oh, it is,"
Melly assured him.
"The harpies are very good."
Easy for her to say. She just drifted across without touching the floor. But Jason decided he had the best chance at surviving, since he could fly, so he stepped out first. Amazingly, the floor held. Piper gripped his hand and followed him.
"If I fall, you're catching me."
Sure. Jason hoped he wasn't blushing. Leo stepped out next.
"You're catching me too, Superman, but I ain't holding your hand."
Melly led them toward the middle of the chamber where a loose sphere of flat-panel video screens floated around a kind of control center. A man hovered inside, checking monitors and reading paper airplane messages. The man paid them no attention as Melly brought them forward. She pushed a 42-inch Sony out of their way and led them into the control area. Leo whistled.
"I gotta get a room like this."
The floating screens showed all sorts of television programs. Some Jason recognized, news broadcasts mostly, but some programs looked a little strange. Gladiators fighting, demigods battling monsters. Maybe they were movies, but they looked more like reality shows. At the far end of the sphere was a silky blue backdrop like a cinema screen, with cameras and studio lights floating around it. The man in the center was talking into an earpiece phone. He had a remote control in each hand and was pointing them at various screens, seemingly at random. He wore a business suit that looked like the sky, blue mostly, but dappled with clouds that changed and darkened and moved across the fabric. He looked like he was in his 60s, with a shock of white hair, but he had a ton of stage makeup on and that smooth plastic surgery look to his face. So he appeared not really young, not really old, just wrong, like a Ken doll someone had halfway melted in a microwave. His eyes darted back and forth from screen to screen like he was trying to absorb everything at once. He muttered things into his phone, and his mouth kept twitching. He was either amused or crazy or both. Melly floated toward him.
Sir... Mr. Aeolus, these demigods...
Hold it.
He held up a hand to silence her, then pointed at one of the screens.
Watch.
It was one of those storm chaser programs where insane thrill seekers drive after tornadoes. As Jason watched, a jeep plowed straight into a funnel cloud and got tossed into the sky. Aeolus shrieked with delight.
The Disaster Channel! People do that on purpose!
He turned toward Jason with a mad grin.
Isn't that amazing? Let's watch it again.
Sir, Melly said, this is Jason, son of...
Yes, yes, I remember, Aeolus said. You're back. How did it go?
Jason hesitated. Sorry? I think you've mistaken me...
No, no, Jason Grace, aren't you? It was, what, last year? You were on your way to fight a sea monster, I believe.
I don't remember. Aeolus laughed.
Must not have been a very good sea monster.
No, I remember every hero who's ever come to me for aid.
Odysseus! Gods, he docked at my island for a month. At least you only stayed a few days. Now, watch this video. These ducks get sucked straight into...
Sir, Melly interrupted, 2 minutes to air.
Air?
Aeolus exclaimed.
I love air. How do I look? Makeup!
Immediately a small tornado of brushes, blotters, and cotton balls descended on Aeolus. They blurred across his face in a cloud of flesh-toned smoke until his coloration was even more gruesome than before. Wind swirled through his hair and left it sticking up like a frosted Christmas tree.
Mr. Aeolus, Jason slipped off the golden backpack. We brought you these rogue storm spirits.
Did you?
Aeolus looked at the bag like it was a gift from a fan, something he really didn't want.
Well, how nice.
Leo nudged him, and Jason offered the bag.
Boreas sent us to capture them for you. We hope you'll accept them and stop, you know, ordering demigods to be killed.
Aeolus laughed and looked incredulously at Melly.
Demigods be killed? Did I order that?
Melly checked her computer tablet.
Yes, sir. 15th of September. Storm spirits released by the death of Typhon. Demigods to be held responsible, etc. Yes, a general order for them all to be killed.
Oh, pish, Aeolus said. I was just grumpy. Rescind that order, Melly. And, who's on guard duty? Teriyaki? Terry? Take these storm spirits down to cell block 14E, will ya?
A harpy swooped out of nowhere, snatched the golden bag, and spiraled into the abyss. Aeolus grinned at Jason.
Now, sorry about that kill-on-sight business, but gods, I really was mad, wasn't I?
His face suddenly darkened, and his suit did the same, the lapels flashing with lightning.
You know, I remember now. Almost seemed like a voice was telling me to give that order. A little cold tingle on the back of my neck.
Jason tensed. A cold tingle on the back of his neck. Why did that sound so familiar?
A, voice in your head, sir?
Yes. How odd. Melly, should we kill them?
No, sir, she said patiently. They just brought us the storm spirits, which makes everything all right.
Of course, Aeolus laughed. Sorry. Melly, let's send the demigod something nice. A box of chocolates, perhaps.
A box of chocolates to every demigod in the world, sir?
No, too expensive. Never mind.
Wait, it's time. I'm on.
Aeolus flew off toward the blue screen as newscast music started to play. Jason looked at Piper and Leo, who seemed just as confused as he was.
Melly, he said, is he always like that?
She smiled sheepishly.
Well, you know what they say. If you don't like his mood, wait 5 minutes. That expression, whichever way the wind blows, that was based on him.
And that thing about the sea monster, Jason said. Was I here before? Melly blushed.
I'm sorry, I don't remember. I'm Mr. Aeolus's new assistant. I've been with him longer than most, but still, not that long.
How long do his assistants usually last? Piper asked.
Oh,
Melly thought for a moment.
I've been doing this for 12 hours?
A voice blared from floating speakers.
And now, weather every 12 minutes. Here's your forecaster for Olympian weather, the OW Channel, Aeolus!
Lights blazed on Aeolus, who was now standing in front of the blue screen. His smile was unnaturally white, and he looked like he'd had so much caffeine his face was about to explode.
Hello, Olympus. Aeolus, master of the winds here, with weather every 12. We'll have a low-pressure system moving over Florida today, so expect milder temperatures since Demeter wishes to spare the citrus farmers.
He gestured at the blue screen. But when Jason checked the monitors, he saw that a digital image was being projected behind Aeolus. So it looked like he was standing in front of a U.S. map with animated smiley suns and frowny storm clouds.
Along the eastern seaboard. Oh, hold on.
He tapped his earpiece.
Sorry, folks. Poseidon is angry with Miami today, so it looks like that Florida freeze is back on. Sorry, Demeter. Over in the Midwest, I'm not sure what St. Louis did to offend Zeus, but you can expect winter storms. Boreas himself is being called down to punish the area with ice. Bad news, Missouri. No, wait. Hephaestus feels sorry for central Missouri, so you all will have much more moderate temperatures and sunny skies.
Aeolus kept going like that, forecasting each area of the country and changing his prediction 2 or 3 times as he got messages over his earpiece, the gods apparently putting in orders for various winds and weather.
This can't be right, Jason whispered. Weather isn't this random.
Melly smirked.
And how often are the mortal weathermen right? They talk about fronts and air pressure and moisture, but the weather surprises them all the time. At least Aeolus tells us why it's so unpredictable. Very hard job, trying to appease all the gods at once. It's enough to drive anyone.
She trailed off. But Jason knew what she meant. Mad. Aeolus was completely mad.
And that's the weather, Aeolus concluded. See you in 12 minutes, because I'm sure it'll change.
The lights shut off, the video monitors went back to random coverage, and just for a moment, Aeolus's face sagged with weariness. Then he seemed to remember he had guests, and he put a smile back on.
So, you brought me some rogue storm spirits, Aeolus said. I suppose...
Thanks.
And did you want something else? I assume so. Demigods always do.
Melly said,
Sir, this is Zeus's son.
Yes, yes, I know that. I said I remembered him from before.
But, sir, they're here from Olympus.
Aeolus looked stunned. Then he laughed so abruptly, Jason almost jumped into the chasm.
You mean you're here on behalf of your father this time? Finally! I knew they would send someone to renegotiate my contract.
What? Jason asked.
Oh, thank goodness.
Aeolus sighed with relief.
It's been, what, 3,000 years since Zeus made me master of the winds? Not that I'm ungrateful, of course. But really, my contract is so vague. Obviously, I'm immortal. But master of the winds... What does that mean? Am I a nature spirit, a demigod, a god? I want to be god of the winds, because the benefits are so much better. Can we start with that?
Jason looked at his friends, mystified.
Dude, Leo said, you think we're here to promote you?
You are, then?
Aeolus grinned. His business suit turned completely blue, not a cloud in the fabric.
Marvelous. I mean, I think I've shown quite a bit of initiative with the Weather Channel, eh? And of course, I'm in the press all the time. So many books have been written about me. Into thin air, up in the air, gone with the wind.
I don't think those are about you, Jason said, before he noticed Melly shaking her head.
Nonsense, Aeolus said. Melly, they're biographies of me, aren't they?
Absolutely, sir, she squeaked.
There, you see? I don't read. Who has time? But obviously the mortals love me. So we'll change my official title to God of the Winds. Then, about salary and staff.
Sir, Jason said, we're not from Olympus. Aeolus blinked.
But
I'm the son of Zeus, yes, Jason said. But we're not here to negotiate your contract. We're on a quest, and we need your help.
Aeolus's expression hardened. Like last time? Like every hero who comes here? Demigods, it's always about you, isn't it?
Sir, please. I don't remember last time, but if you helped me once before...
I'm always helping. Well, Sometimes I'm destroying, but mostly I'm helping. And sometimes I'm asked to do both at the same time. Why, Aeneas, the first of your kind?
My kind? Jason asked. You mean demigods?
Oh, please, Aeola said. I mean your line of demigods. You know, Aeneas, son of Venus, the only surviving hero of Troy. When the Greeks burned down his city, he escaped to Italy, where he founded the kingdom that would eventually become Rome. Blah, blah, blah. That's what I meant.
I don't get it, Jason admitted. Aeolus rolled his eyes.
The point being, I was thrown in the middle of that conflict, too. Juno calls up. Oh, Aeolus, destroy Aeneas's ships for me. I don't like him. Then Neptune says, no, you don't. That's my territory. Calm the winds. Then Juno is like, no, wreck his ships or I'll tell Jupiter you're uncooperative. Do you think it's easy juggling requests like that?
No, Jason said. I guess not.
And don't get me started on Amelia Earhart. I'm still getting angry calls from Olympus about knocking her out of the sky.
We just want information, Piper said in her most calming voice. We hear you know everything.
Aeolus straightened his lapels and looked slightly mollified.
Well, that's true, of course. For instance, I know that this business here...
He waggled his fingers at the three of them.
This hare-brained scheme of Juno's to bring you all together is likely to end in bloodshed. As for you, Piper McLean, I know your father is in serious trouble.
He held out his hand, and a scrap of paper fluttered into his grasp. It was a photo of Piper with a guy who must have been her dad. His face did look familiar. Jason was pretty sure he'd seen him in some movies.
Piper took the photo. Her hands were shaking.
This is from his wallet.
Yes, Aeola said. All things lost in the wind eventually come to me. The photo blew away when the Earthborn captured him.
The what? Piper asked.
Aeola waved aside the question and narrowed his eyes at Leo.
Now you, son of Hephaestus. Yes. I see your future.
Another paper fell into the wind god's hands, an old tattered drawing done in crayons.
Leo took it as if it might be coated in poison. He staggered backward.
Leo? Jason said. What is it?
Something I drew when I was a kid.
He folded it quickly and put it in his coat.
It's nothing.
Aeolus laughed.
Really? Just the key to your success. Now, where were we?
Ah, yes.
You wanted information. Are you sure about that? Sometimes information can be dangerous.
He smiled at Jason like he was issuing a challenge. Behind him, Melly shook her head in warning.
Yeah, Jason said. We need to find the lair of Enceladus.
Aeolus's smile melted.
The giant? Why would you want to go there? He's horrible. He doesn't even watch my program.
Piper held up the photo.
Aeolus, he's got my father. We need to rescue him and find out where Hera is being held captive.
Now that's impossible, Aeolus said. Even I can't see that. And believe me, I've tried. There's a veil of magic over Hera's location. Very strong. Impossible to locate.
She's at a place called the Wolf House, Jason said.
Hold on. Aeolus put a hand to his forehead and closed his eyes.
I'm getting something. Yes. She's at a place called the Wolf House.
Sadly, I don't know where that is.
Enceladus does. Piper persisted. If you help us find him, we could get the location of the goddess.
Yeah, Leo said, catching on.
and if we save her, she'd be really grateful to you.
And Zeus might promote you, Jason finished.
Aeolus's eyebrows crept up. A promotion? And all you want from me is the giant's location?
Well, if you could get us there too, Jason amended, that would be great.
Melly clapped her hands in excitement. Oh, he could do that. He often sends helpful winds.
Melly, quiet, Aeolus snapped. I have half a mind to fire you for letting these people in under false pretenses.
Her face paled.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
It wasn't her fault, Jason said. But about that help.
Aeolus tilted his head as if thinking. Then Jason realized the Wind Lord was listening to voices in his earpiece.
Well, Zeus approves, Aeolus muttered. He says it would be better if you could avoid saving her until after the weekend, because he has a big party planned. Ow! That's Aphrodite yelling at him, reminding him that the solstice starts at dawn. She says I should help you. And Hephaestus. Yes. Very rare they agree on anything. Hold on.
Jason smiled at his friends. Finally, they were having some good luck. Their godly parents were standing up for them. Back toward the entrance, Jason heard a loud belch. Coach Hedge waddled in from the lobby, grass all over his face. Melly saw him coming across the makeshift floor and caught her breath.
Who is that?
Jason stifled a cough.
That? That's just Coach Hedge. Gleason Hedge. He's our...
Jason wasn't sure what to call him. Teacher? Friend? Problem?
Our guide. He's so goatly, Melly murmured.
Behind her, Piper poofed out her cheeks, pretending to vomit.
What's up, guys? Hedge trotted over. Wow, nice place.
Ooh, sod squares.
Coach, you just ate, Jason said, and we're using the sod as a floor. This is, Melly.
Honora.
Hedge smiled winningly.
Beautiful as a summer breeze.
Melly blushed.
And Aeolus here was just about to help us, Jason said.
Yes, the Windlord muttered. It seems so. You'll find Enceladus on Mount Diablo.
Devil Mountain? Leo asked. That doesn't sound good.
I remember that place, Piper said. I went there once with my dad. It's just east of San Francisco Bay.
The Bay Area again? The coach shook his head. Not good. Not good at all.
Now,
Aeolus began to smile. As to getting you there... Suddenly, his face went slack. He bent over and tapped his earpiece as if it were malfunctioning. When he straightened again, his eyes were wild. Despite the makeup, he looked like an old man. An old, very frightened man.
She hasn't spoke to me for centuries. I can't... Yes. Yes, I understand.
He swallowed, regarding Jason as if he had suddenly turned into a giant cockroach.
I'm sorry, son of Jupiter. New orders. You all have to die.
Melly squeaked. But, sir, Zeus said to help them, Aphrodite, Hephaestus.
Melly, Aeolus snapped. Your job is already on the line.
Besides, there are some orders that transcend even the wishes of the gods, especially when it comes to the forces of nature.
Whose orders? Jason said. Zeus will fire you if you don't help us.
I doubt it.
Aeolus flicked his wrist, and far below them a cell door opened in the pit. Jason could hear storm spirits screaming out of it, spiraling up toward them, howling for blood.
Even Zeus understands the order of things, Aeolus said. And if she is waking, by all the gods, she cannot be denied. Goodbye, heroes. I'm terribly sorry, but I'll have to make this quick. I'm back on the air in 4 minutes.
Jason summoned his sword. Coach Hedge pulled out his club. Melly, the aura, yelled, No! She dived at their feet just as the storm spirits hit with hurricane force, blasting the floor to pieces, shredding the carpet samples and marble and linoleum into what should have been lethal projectiles, had Melly's robes not spread out like a shield and absorbed the brunt of the impact. The five of them fell into the pit, and Aeolus screamed above them,
Melly, you are so fired!
Quick, Melly yelled. Son of Zeus, do you have any power over the air?
A little.
Then help me, or you're all dead.
Melly grabbed his hand, and an electric charge went through Jason's arm. He understood what she needed. They had to control their fall and head for one of the open tunnels. The storm spirits were following them down, closing rapidly, bringing with them a cloud of deadly shrapnel. Jason grabbed Piper's hand.
Group hug!
Hedge, Leo, and Piper tried to huddle together, hanging on to Jason and Melly as they fell.
This is not good, Leo yelled. Bring it on, gas bags!
Hedge yelled up at the storm spirits.
I'll pulverize you!
He's magnificent, Melly sighed.
Concentrate? Jason prompted.
Right,
she said. They channeled the wind so their fall became more of a tumble into the nearest open chute. Still, they slammed into the tunnel at painful speed and went rolling over each other down a steep vent that was not designed for people. There was no way they could stop. Melly's robes billowed around her. Jason and the others clung to her desperately, and they began to slow down, but the storm spirits were screaming into the tunnel behind them.
Can't hold long, Melly warned. Stay together when the winds hit.
You're doing great, Melly, Hedge said. My own mama was an aura, you know. She couldn't have done better herself.
Iris, message me?
Melly pleaded. Hedge winked.
Could you guys plan your date later?
Piper screamed.
Look!
Behind them, the tunnel was turning dark. Jason could feel his ears pop as the pressure built.
Can't hold them, Melly warned, but I'll try to shield you. Do you one more favor?
Thanks, Melly, Jason said. I hope you get a new job. She smiled and then dissolved, wrapping them in a warm, gentle breeze. Then the real winds hit, shooting them into the sky so fast, Jason blacked out. Chapter 39 Piper. Piper dreamed she was on the Wilderness School dorm roof. The desert night was cold, but she'd brought blankets, and with Jason next to her, she didn't need any more warmth. The air smelled of sage and burning mesquite. On the horizon, the spring mountains loomed like jagged black teeth, the dim glow of Las Vegas behind them. The stars were so bright, Piper had been afraid they wouldn't be able to see the meteor shower. She didn't want Jason to think she'd dragged him up here on false pretenses, even though her pretenses had been totally false. But the meteors did not disappoint. One streaked across the sky almost every minute, a line of white, yellow, or blue fire. Piper was sure her Grandpa Tom would have some Cherokee myth to explain them, but at the moment she was busy creating her own story. Jason took her hand, finally, and pointed as two meteors skipped across the atmosphere and formed a cross. Wow, he said. I can't believe Leo didn't want to see this. Actually, I didn't invite him, Piper said casually. Jason smiled. Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You ever feel like three would be a crowd?
Yeah, Jason admitted. Like, right now. You know how much trouble we'd get in if we got caught up here?
Oh, I'd make up something, Piper said. I can be very persuasive.
So, you want to dance, or what?
He laughed. His eyes were amazing, and his smile was even better in the starlight.
With no music, at night, on a rooftop. Sounds dangerous.
I'm a dangerous girl.
That I can believe.
He stood and offered her his hand.
They slow danced a few steps, but it quickly turned into a kiss.
Piper almost couldn't kiss him again because she was too busy smiling. Then her dream changed. Or maybe she was dead in the underworld because she found herself back in Medea's department store. Please let this be a dream, she murmured, and not my eternal punishment.
No, dear, said a woman's honey-sweet voice. No punishment.
Piper turned, afraid she'd see Medea, but a different woman stood next to her, browsing through the 50% off rack. The woman was gorgeous. Shoulder-length hair, a graceful neck, perfect features, and an amazing figure tucked into jeans and a snowy white top. Piper had seen her share of actresses. Most of her dad's dates were knockout beautiful, but this lady was different. She was elegant without trying, fashionable without effort, stunning without makeup. After seeing Aeolus with his silly facelifts and cosmetics, Piper thought this woman looked even more astonishing. There was nothing artificial about her. Yet as Piper watched, the woman's appearance changed. Piper couldn't decide the color of her eyes or the exact color of her hair. The woman became more and more beautiful, as if her image were aligning itself to Piper's thoughts, getting as close as possible to Piper's ideal of beauty.
Aphrodite, Piper said.
Mom?
The goddess smiled.
You're only dreaming, my sweet. If anyone wonders, I wasn't here. Okay?
Piper wanted to ask a thousand questions, but they all crowded together in her head. Aphrodite held up a turquoise dress. Piper thought it looked awesome, but the goddess made a face.
This isn't my color, is it?
Pity. It's cute. Medea really does have some lovely things here.
This building exploded, Piper stammered. I saw it.
Yes, Aphrodite agreed. I suppose that's why everything's on sale. Just a memory now. And I'm sorry to pull you out of your other dream. Much more pleasant, I know.
Piper's face burned. She didn't know whether she was more angry or embarrassed, but mostly she felt hollow with disappointment.
It wasn't real. It never even happened. So why do I remember it so vividly?
Aphrodite smiled.
Because you are my daughter, Piper. You see possibilities much more vividly than others. You see what could be. And it still might be. Don't give up. Unfortunately,
the goddess gestured around the department store.
You have other trials to face first. Medea will be back, along with many other enemies. The doors of death have opened.
What do you mean?
Aphrodite winked at her.
You're a smart one, Piper. You know.
A cold feeling settled over her. The sleeping woman, the one Medea and Midas called their patron. She's managed to open a new entrance from the underworld. She's letting the dead escape back into the world.
And not just any dead. The worst, the most powerful, the ones most likely to hate the gods.
The monsters are coming back from Tartarus the same way, Piper guessed. That's why they don't stay disintegrated.
Yes. Their patron, as you call her, has a special relationship with Tartarus, the spirit of the pit.
Aphrodite held up a gold-sequined top.
No, this would make me look ridiculous.
Piper laughed uneasily.
You can't look anything but perfect.
You're sweet, Aphrodite said. But beauty is about finding the right fit, the most natural fit. To be perfect, you have to feel perfect about yourself. Avoid trying to be something you're not. For a goddess, that's especially hard. We can change so easily.
My dad thought you were perfect.
Piper's voice quavered.
He never got over you.
Aphrodite's gaze became distant.
Yes, Tristan. Oh, he was amazing. So gentle and kind, funny and handsome. Yet he had so much sadness inside.
Could we please not talk about him in the past tense?
I'm sorry, dear. I didn't want to leave your father, of course. It's always so hard, but it was for the best. If he had realized who I actually was...
Wait, he didn't know you were a goddess?
Of course not.
Aphrodite sounded offended.
I wouldn't do that to him. For most mortals, that's simply too hard to accept. It can ruin their lives. Ask your friend Jason. Lovely boy, by the way. His poor mother was destroyed when she found out she'd fallen in love with Zeus. No, it was much better Tristan believed that I was a mortal woman who left him without explanation. Better a bittersweet memory than an immortal, unattainable goddess. Which brings me to an important matter.
She opened her hand and showed Piper a glowing glass vial of pink liquid.
This is one of Medea's kinder mixtures. It erases only recent memories. When you save your father, if you can save him, you should give him this.
Piper couldn't believe what she was hearing.
You want me to dope my dad? You want me to make him forget what he's been through?
Aphrodite held up the vial. The liquid cast a pink glow over her face.
Your father acts confident, Piper, but he walks a fine line between two worlds. He's worked his whole life to deny the old stories about gods and spirits, yet he fears those stories might be real. He fears that he's shut off an important part of himself, and someday it will destroy him. Now he's been captured by a giant. He's living a nightmare. Even if he survives, if he has to spend the rest of his life with those memories, knowing that gods and spirits walk the earth, it will shatter him. That's what our enemy hopes for. She will break him, and thus break your spirit.
Piper wanted to shout that Aphrodite was wrong. Her dad was the strongest person she knew. Piper would never take his memories the way Hera had taken Jason's. But somehow she couldn't stay angry with Aphrodite. She remembered what her dad had said months ago, at the beach at Big Sur. If I really believed in ghost country, or animal spirits, or Greek gods, I don't think I could sleep at night. I'd always be looking for somebody to blame. Now Piper wanted someone to blame too.
Who is she? Piper demanded. The one controlling the giants.
Aphrodite pursed her lips. She moved to the next rack, which held battered armor and ripped togas,
but Aphrodite looked through them as if they were designer outfits.
"You have a strong will," she mused. "I'm never given much credit among the gods. My children are laughed at. They're dismissed as conceited and shallow."
"Some of them are," Aphrodite laughed.